Hello, welcome to the Premier Podcast Euro Special, where three lads discuss all things Euro 2024. On today's episode, England somehow scraped through against Slovakia. Bellingham scores an overhead kick in added time to rescue the Three Lions, with Captain Kane winning it in extra time. However, why was it such a poor display again, and why won't Southgate make changes sooner? And is there a divide between the England squad and the media and fans? We'll finish with a roundup of the rest of the action, including wins for Germany and Spain, who meet in quarterfinal action this Friday. I'm your host, Alex Murphy, and once again, I'm joined by Tom Lawrence, but still no Tom Gallagher, who we haven't heard from since he entered Glastonbury last Tuesday. Lauro, so 94 minutes, 20 seconds in, long throw in, looks like England are a minute and a half away from humiliation, probably right up there with the Iceland game 8 years ago, but upsets Jude Bellingham, and what a goal.
Yeah, great goal, and one of those moments that doesn't normally happen for England, particularly in a knockout game. I was just watching the Lions then with Big Ive and Harry Kane, and Kane said we'd never get those moments in games that really matter. And I thought it was quite impressive, actually, that they said that, you know, in training they work on every little aspect, and they said they might need a long throw, even from, I think it was Stones or someone, went right out on the touchline and ran across just as Walker threw it, and just to cause chaos. And then Ferrari Mark Guay won a header in front of about five Slovakian players, and there was Jude Bellingham with the bicycle kick. You couldn't really write it, could you? They were just saying on the bus after the game, it couldn't just be a tap in or anything like that. It had to be an overhead kick from Jude Bellingham, who's made a name for himself doing that sort of thing now, I suppose. So that was a very, very positive moment from the game yesterday, wasn't it? And once that goal went in, you felt we'd probably have enough to use the momentum to carry us on to victory. But yeah, some other pressing issues to get into, but that moment was wonderful and possibly the biggest eruption I can remember.
It was, yeah. And on the flip side, though, obviously in the celebrations, there was a couple of gestures from Bellingham. I think there was one towards the England crowd, sort of the whole talking towards the ear as if to say, you know, what's the problem? There was another one where he seemed to make some sort of form for like fake massive set of bollocks that he's got on him. But I've actually just heard this afternoon that UEFA are going to look into that. There's going to be like a disciplinary committee that's going to look into if that's a obscene gesture. So hopefully nothing that comes of that. I think he's even come out personally and tweeted Jude Bellingham and said it wasn't aimed at Slovakia fans. It was a personal joke with some people that were in the stadium. But yeah, that's going to be investigated. But surely that's just heat of the moment in scoring a 94th minute equaliser for you to keep your country in a major tournament.
Yeah, but I think Jude Bellingham's felt a little bit targeted even before the Euros, because he'd done that gesture of like, what are you talking about, after he scored against Serbia in the first game, yeah, when everyone was really excited. And he made some comments after the Champions League final about like, oh, everyone told me I couldn't do it. And I remember we said at the time, like, all I've ever heard about Jude Bellingham is praise. Everyone loves him. So he seems to have created a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. Maybe he feels like he needs to play with that to give him that edge and that extra few percent. But look, that's fine. If he's gonna pop up and score an overhead in the last minute of all the games, he can carry on playing as uselessly as he has in the last couple. and you know, divided opinion on some of those gestures and the way that he's acting, sort of screaming "Who else?" at the crowd. Some people I've heard in the media over the last 24 hours have sort of said you need to be a little bit more humble than that. But others have said, I like the arrogance, and we don't normally see it from England players, and I can kind of see it both ways. But if we win the Euros, I'll be happy to see it. But until then, I'd like some better performances personally.
Yeah, he just seems to be absolute, like, elite win-at-all-cost mentality. He was after the game where that ranks in his best ever goals. It's clearly going to, of probably in his short career to date, be right up there. And he said, I'll tell you in a couple of weeks, says if on July 19th or whenever the final is, it's we've won and lifted the trophy, then yeah, it's going to be right up there for my career goals. But until then, it's an equaliser. So yeah, elite mentality for him. Let's stay on the positives before we look a bit deeper into the performance that followed, and then straight into added time after Bellingham's goal. You got three of the subs that eventually came on. Palmer Brick put in a free kick into the box, punched out from Dubravka to the edge as a sort of shot which is a bit scuffed. Ivan Toney nods it back across goal, and there's the captain Harry Kane to stick it into an empty net from a few yards out.
And again, I've just had the luxury of hearing Harry Kane and Big Ive on Lion's Den. And like that looked like a bit of a chaotic goal that was a little bit sort of all over the place. But Harry Kane said as soon as it left Eze's foot on the edge of the box, he saw Tony at the back stick and his eyes lit up and thought, he's putting that straight back across goal and I'm going to be there for a tap-in. And that's exactly what happened. And Harry Kane scores so many second headers off set pieces. Do you remember at Tottenham, the amount of headers he'd score at the back post where someone would flick it on and or free kicks back across goal? And that's exactly his kind of goal. And look, we're 1 minute into extra time with a team that's been changed because it wasn't working very well. We needed to do something different. And all of a sudden, we're scoring goals and gaining momentum. So I know we'll come on to it, but maybe things should happen a little bit quicker. But yeah, it would have been very England to go into extra time and end up just seeing it out to penalties. But to go and take the ball by the horns and score in minute one is another big positive. Because I know there's still a big negative sort of cloud over everything at the moment, in some ways, definitely rightly so. But in that few minutes of getting the equaliser and scoring that goal in extra time, props to everyone because it was brilliant. And to be fair, Eze to Tony, a couple of the subs combining. I think Tony even maybe won the free kick as well that got put in. So
yeah, I think he did.
Really good.
Yeah. What one thing that struck me sort of, and this is post-game, obviously wasn't even thinking about it during it, but post-game, a couple of players spoke about how they'd worked on those long throw-ins and they knew that if the chance came, they were going to use it. I don't get why. I don't know how many, I can't think how many throw-ins we won in that area. But my thoughts on England throw-ins is it kind of, you know, jinx off a fullback, the winger picks the ball up, pass it back to Kyle Walker from the throw-in, who passed it across to Stones and then Guy, and then out to Trippier. If we've won throw-ins there, that's clearly something in our arsenal that we should look to utilise. I know it was kind of like all pack the box, but actually when you pan round for the Bellingham goal, we haven't got like Pickford up. We haven't got like every defender in there and every player. There were still people for that first goal there. To me, it seems like a viable asset for if we win throw-ins in that area and Walker's got that length of throw and you've got Ferrari Mark who's going to shrug off a few people and win that flick on, then that's a asset that we should look to use in game. We don't need to wait for that to be a backs against the wall 1-0 down. And, you know, it seems like a lot of our players almost like regimented. It's like get that ball and just chuck it back to your fullback and try and build up play again. But you're in the opposition's half there.
Yeah, but I agree. Maybe it's a bit of football snobbery about a bit like no one wants to play long ball anymore. No one wants to just launch throw-ins into the box because I guess you've got more control over it. But at that point, it was just needs must, wasn't it? But it's always the same. Like you always show urgency right at the end of the game when you need to score a goal to get an equaliser. And everyone's always like, why didn't we show that urgency earlier on? Well, earlier on, the risk-reward is different, isn't it? You could do something and end up losing the ball and be 2-0 down. But look, it was desperation. And like I said earlier, it's just one of those things that never happens for England. Like that could have not gone in and people could have been like, oh, it was the last minute, 95th minute. Like you just said, no one was really in the box and we were launching it at Mark Guay, who was surrounded by five players. We just got that rub of the green and that rabbit out of the hat that very rarely happens for us. And that's why it was so eruptive when we scored. It was like relief and shock and surprise as well as joy that we'd been blessed with that goal.
Yeah, I think it's the first game we've not watched together yesterday, but we were chatting in the group chat throughout and you could kind of feel where it was going, kind of going back to the studio, that kind of dejected Gary Neville, Ian Wright, them questioning about the changes not being made, which we'll come on to. It kind of felt like the script was there, wasn't it, for like a awful, awful tournament summed up by a display with no shots on target and for it to be this kind of, do you even bother watching the rest of the tournament? Because I don't care what people say. You can love football as much as you want, but when your team's out of it, the edge comes off the tournament. But yeah, magical moment. And hopefully it's something that looked back on in years to come, in documentaries to come, as the moment that England on the brink of elimination score that goal, go on to win it. And who knows where it's going to take us. Right, if that was the positive, we best cover off the previous 94 and a half minutes. And one thing that struck me yesterday is I think we've been fairly full of praise for England in regards to not look great going forward, but actually looked pretty strong in the back. I think we had the lowest XG expected goals against up until yesterday, but seemed a little bit shakier straight from the off yesterday.
Yeah, it's just really, really bizarre. And I don't know, I don't want to come out of all the old cliches like, oh, is the shirt and the badge really heavy? But I think it's, is it the tactics that they're being asked to play that are so different to club level? And is it a mixture of everything put together? Is it a case that Slovakia had a lot less to lose than us? But we just looked really nervy, I thought. And people were making passes and decisions that you wouldn't normally associate with before this tournament, but it keeps seeming to happen. And obviously, when you're in a knockout game, it's heightened because once they score, you know we have to score then. And just like, I saw a clip earlier of their goal, and just as the ball's played in, the through ball to the player that scored, Kyle Walker makes this really bizarre run to keep everyone onside. Like, yeah. Stones and, I think, Gueye, or Stones and Trippier maybe are trying to defend. Stones and Gueye, they're like sort of trying to keep defend but keep a high line, and Walker just sprints around them, and when you see the ball play through, he's playing everyone 5 yards off onside. So just weird little messy moments like that, and we'll come on to changes and what Southgate could have done, but the starting 11 have still got, you know, we've still got big names out there that you'd expect a lot more from than what we're getting. And to go 1-0 down to Slovakia and not really have much of a sniff all half other than a disallowed goal was surprising, because I think everyone thought, right, we're through the group stage now, benefit of the doubt, we'll go and attack the Slovakians, get ourselves a nice 3-0 and sail into the quarters. But it was just a sort of continuation of what we've seen already, and it's really hard to put your finger on, but it happened again.
It seemed like right from the start, as you say, there were nerves there, and that kind of just was shown straight away, wasn't it, with Trippier selling short a pass back to Gueye, and Gueye had to bring his man down, otherwise he'd race through, and he's booked after like 60 seconds, isn't he? And actually, I think from memory, Trippier could have played the ball up the line, but obviously pretty typical of what England have done so far, did that sort of turn back in on his stronger right foot. I guess that's part of the problem with him being out there. Goes to play it back to Gueye and the ball's a bit light, and you've got one of your centre-backs in Mark Gueye, probably one of the only good news story from England's campaign so far, booked really early in a game and now missing the quarterfinal as well.
Yeah, Ferrari Mark's been excellent and he'll be a big miss. Hopefully it's just a service this weekend and we can bring him back in for the semis. But you're right. And when you watch on TV, it's really easy to see the right pass at every point. Do you know what I mean? And that every time someone receives the ball, I'm just screaming, saying, make that pass, make that pass. And I know it's easier said than done, but these players are good enough and they normally make that pass. But there's a slight hesitance, which is nerves or overthinking in their mind. Like you say, Trippier could have played a ball up the line. Every time it's received in midfield, it always looks like there's a ball there. And then by the time they thought about it, it's gone. And then they have to come back. And it's just that split second of hesitance and nerves which is creating the frustration, I think, because it's making us play slower, it's making us get up the pitch slower, it's making it easier for our position, and in turn, you just get far less chances and excitement out of it, and then it grows and the frustration grows, particularly in knockout football. The worry and the risk grows, and it becomes even nervier, and it's a bit of an endless cycle. So that's what I've noticed. I think there's a hesitancy on. And that's why Maney's been so good, because he's so young and fearless. He's come in and he is popping the ball about. He is making the pass. He isn't as worried about giving it away. Whereas a lot of other players just seem like they're overthinking it a little bit and don't want to be the one to make a mistake. Whereas I'd rather him play a little bit more naturally, a little bit more off the cuff and play the ball, play the 1-2s, play the quick passes. And then maybe we'll find openings a little bit more than we are. Because at the moment, it's just reminding me of like 20 years ago, England, where we had loads of good players and we couldn't string passes together. And we're not going to win a tournament playing like that. So something is going to have to change, probably on the mental side of things as well as probably tactically.
I think everyone's pretty aware of Kieran Trippier's situation with having to play out of position at the minute. He doesn't look that comfortable out there. He clearly wouldn't pick to be there, but is doing a job for his country. But I think slightly more worrying has been Kyle Walker. You just touched on keeping the Slovakian player on side by making a really weird run, which meant he was way behind at the centre-halves. But I thought his game in general yesterday was terrible. I didn't think he was particularly good against Slovenia either. And Trent's got his shortcomings as a defender. Everyone's aware of them. And Kyle Walker is going to go down as one of the Premier League and England's best ever right-backs. But he isn't playing very well. And I actually thought defensively looked a bit vulnerable yesterday. There was a Slovakian winger who got in behind him a couple of times, and normally Walker catches him up in a foot race, but Slovakian guy almost seemed to be matching him for pace as well. So if he's not at it defensively, is there a potential that you could look to bring Kyle Walker out of the team and bring Trent in?
Yeah, definitely. I think anyone, I mean, there's the potential to do loads of stuff with the team. And in tournament football, I think you have to. Like, form is obviously massive because you only get, we've only got three games now. And it's either win them all and win the tournament or not. So if you can spot someone out of form and we've got a ready made replacement that can maybe give us a different dynamic as well, like in that sense, obviously Trent would be so good at creating from a deeper position like he does so well for Liverpool. It would be good to see. And I think Gary Neville was calling for it at half time. I personally think there's a way that we can get everyone into the team, particularly with Gray being suspended and Trippier maybe being injured or not liking it at left back. I think we can change the shape. Maybe put Kyle Walker back in a three alongside Stones and Gray, but because Ferrari might suspended, it'll probably be Konta. You can maybe bring Shaw back into the team at left wing back and give him a little less responsibility defensively, but and a little bit more of a freedom of a position, if you like, to get up and down and get his fitness back. And then also you'd be getting Foden and Bellingham in as some tens then behind Kane and getting your whip from your wing back. So I personally think a change of shape would be good, but I'm not there to pick the team. But yeah, I think Gary Neville said at halftime he would have brought Trent on, and I agreed with him. We need something a little bit different in those moments when we're just not creating anything. And the one time yesterday, the other thing is, you talk about Kyle Walker at right back, Trippier at left back. The one time Kieran Trippier made a run that a proper left back would do out of defence and into the box, Harry Kane found him. And Trippier put a ball across to Foden, who should have stayed onside, and it would have been 1-0 at that point. But there wasn't enough of that, and that's why there's clamour for a left back to be included in the squad or Luke Shaw to return as quickly as possible.
Do you know what? I think any other situation, Trippier wouldn't have squared that. I've watched it back. I know he touched it onto his left foot, but he could have just brought it into his right foot. He was through and Trippier's tucking that. But do you know what? In the first half, there was one which came across, wasn't it, on his right foot, and he hit it first time, Trippier, yeah. And like nearly put it out the stadium. I think you even commented saying that's one thing if you're, you know, weak foot but playing on the other side, is that when that ball comes across, it's on your stronger side to hit. And I think that knocked his confidence, because I think any other time he's not squaring that, Trippier's just finishing that. He is plenty good enough. We've seen him on set pieces and dead balls to know how he can strike a ball. I think he'd have done that. Let's just stay on your formation bit there. So you say about the back three, I guess that's the formation that's got England most success in recent years in tournaments. It's got us to 1-0 up in a European final before. So you say Walker into centre-back then, and then you bring Trent into the side, do you? Trent at right wing-back, so there's less reliance on him defensively and he can focus on his attacking style of play without needing to be shoehorned into a centre mid-space.
Yeah, and also in the context that Luke Shaw's coming back from for full fitness, is that if you've got a back four, you've got a big job on at left back defensively as well as attack. But if there's a back three and he's got Konza helping him out, it might give him a little bit more freedom to get his fitness back without having as much responsibility defensively. And I think that shape would help us, because then you actually could get Foden and Bellingham into the team as two tens behind Kane, and you get your whip from your Shaw and your Trents. And the midfield's got a little bit more protection because John Stones could probably step out a little bit more. If you've got two covering centre-halves, you've got the pace there in Walker, and hopefully Ferrari Mark will be back in after this Saturday if we get through, but Konza, if he's going to deputise, I just think that would really suit us. Saka could play left wing back as well, but it's a little bit irrelevant because it's not going to happen, but I think that would be a good way to actually get the players that he wants to play into the side, and he's done it before. You know, the best win we've had in recent years is the Germany one. In knockout football in the last Euros, and we played that system, and Kyle Walker was brilliant at right centre back. So it's difficult because it feels like part of me feels like he doesn't want to make a change, because if it works, everyone can turn around and go, see? What I want to do is be involved in the dressing room or the tactical situations before the game where they're having meetings and talking through. I want to see what he's saying to Phil Foden. What is he liking from Phil Foden and Trent on the left? And Trippier on the left-hand side. What is Gareth Southgate thinking? Oh, that's really worked today. We're going to keep with that. Because they've started every single game, both of them, on the left-hand side. What is he looking at and thinking, blimey, yeah. No, we definitely don't want a proper left-winger out there. or we definitely don't want to make a change at left back because that's really working. That's not being sarcastic. I generally would, because there must be some, like, he knows his stuff, and so does Steve Holland. Like, I would love to know what it is they're seeing from that makes them think that that can't really be changed. And it was only changed yesterday because Trippier got injured and we put Saka at left back. So
do you know what I'm really interested in as well alongside that is I'd love to see team talks at half time. Like, it felt like England needed an absolute bollocking and have in recent stage of tournaments. I'd love to be in there at half time to just see how Gareth Southgate's talking to people. Now, I'm not saying bollocking needs to necessarily be all out screaming in people's faces. I think that kind of style of leadership's maybe going away a little bit, but certainly like a bit of a G up and a conversation that's not good enough. And they were saying in the studio yesterday, they were saying about, you know, what's Harry Kane's job here at halftime as captain? Is Harry Kane then going around man to man saying that's not good enough? Who's the people in that dressing room who are doing that? And for me, I think within that squad, you've now got, we just spoke about Kane there, you've got Jude Bellingham, who's obviously star man at Real Madrid now. You've got in Kyle Walker and John Stones, two players who have won multiple Premier Leagues, Champions League with Man City, all of these trophies. It feels like there should be enough voices within the dressing room to be voicing concerns about performance and shape and tactics. Like, are they going and speaking to Southgate today and saying, look, Gaffer, we've got through the group stages. We've really close to getting eliminated yesterday. We're four games into the tournament. It hasn't worked. Is it time that we do something different? Is there that sort of relationship there between management and players for that? Or is it all a bit kind of Southgate's done so much work on the culture that everyone's really close mates?
Yeah. You've got to remember as well, though, that some of it's on the players. Like, regardless of what formation's being played or whatever, Harry Kane's going to be up front. And so far, he's probably been a little bit... I mean, he's scored two goals in four games. But he's probably been a little bit below par in terms of his overall effect on the game and his efficiency. Jude Bellingham... Other than the first half an hour, well, at the Serbia game, he was really good, but the last three games, he's been poor, and then he scores an overhead kick. Southgate could look back at them and say, yeah, I know it's been poor and it hasn't worked, so can you start playing? Do you know what I mean? Can you start playing a little bit better? Because I do think there is, some of it is definitely, I don't agree with some of the tactics. I definitely think we need to be making changes far quicker on in the game, but some of it is definitely the players as well. They're not playing very well. We just talked about Kyle Walker making mistakes he never normally would. No one in midfield's particularly played well. I know Declan Rice grew into the game yesterday, but this is the worst run of games I've seen Declan Rice have in a while. And it's to be fair, with him, it's a high bar. But he's been overrun in midfield a couple of times this tournament. Harry Kane's been quieter, although he's still getting his goals, and that's why you keep him in there. And then Jude Bellingham as well. So you'd have thought they're having those kind of conversations in there, but it's probably hard to put their finger on at the moment, because even though the tactics probably aren't what we all want and think would be the best way to maybe get more out of our game in an attacking sense, the players aren't playing as well as they should be, and they're not having as big an effect on the game as they should be. And until they pick up form, there's only so much anyone can do.
Yeah, definitely. Right, well, let's carry on the vein of kind of the decisions and some of the conversations being had by Southgate, because halftime yesterday, the whole studio, every conversation in the pub and every group chat in England would have been the need for changes and multiple changes. And we were almost, I imagine, the same conversation we were having was being had across the country when it pans back to the stadium after halftime and you see all the subs walking off the pitch and there's been no changes made. What is stopping Southgate across previous games, and in particular yesterday, where it is literally do or die knockout football, from making any changes at all? Because it's one thing to stick with the same starting 11 because that's your trust and you feel that you're close to getting there with it. But then when it's not working and you then just make zero changes at all, I think is another thing.
Yeah. And particularly when it's getting worse, it's not a one-off. Like, we were poor against Denmark, we were poor against Slovenia, and we were poor in that first half. And you just think nothing changed in the second half of those other games when you didn't make the changes that everyone wanted. So why did you think it would today? Like, we've played four games, we've drawn three of them. So the thing is, if you ask Southgate, he'll say he's justified because we got the equaliser in the 95th minute. But that was a one in a million moment. We were out. We were home. Everything we've got now is a bonus because we were gone. I almost turned it off because I was that sick watching it. So he's got a massive get out of jail card. But in answer to the question, no one knows. That's why I'd love to hear the conversations him and Steve Holland are having. I saw Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank sat on our bench yesterday, and I know he won't have a massive say, but he's a pundit. And I guarantee if Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank was in the ITV studio yesterday at halftime, he'd have been saying exactly the same as everyone else. He'd have been going, you're getting no joy down the left-hand side. Forget the fact it's Foden. We need to make a change and have a threat out there. We need to stretch the pitch and make it more spacious in the middle for players like Jude Bellingham and Harry Kane to drop in. And we need to go at their right-back who's having a game off every single team we've played. But he sat on the England bench and he sat there quietly and you're thinking, what is going through these people's heads? And maybe there's an answer and maybe they're right because we're in the quarters. But it's one thing saying we're in the quarters. If the quarters was good enough, we'd all be celebrating now. But we all want to win the tournament and we're favourites. And everyone's concern and frustration is coming from the fact that playing like that and making late changes to the team is going to end up getting us knocked out. And it's worrying. Because Southgate doesn't seem for turning. And it's all very well blocking out outside noise, but it's not one or two people. Everyone thinks exactly the same. So who's right, Southgate or everyone else? Do you know what I mean? We are crying out. Like you say, stick with the same starting 11 if you want. I don't even agree with that. But if you want to do that, that's fine. But at halftime, at least 5 minutes after half, make changes. The game was meandering away and it drifted all the way to the 95th minute. And on any other day, we'd have been out and he would have been wrong. And he's got to get a jail free card. So I'd love to see him against Switzerland start with something different or at least make changes at halftime if it's not working. And if you take the last four games, even five games, including Iceland, we need to make changes earlier. Anthony Gordon didn't even get on at all yesterday. No. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's brought on Cole Palmer. That was fine. That was the right sub. Even that was a bit too late. And then he's brought Eze on. And Eze's ended up being involved, which is fine. But you think, where's he plucked that one from? What's gone through his mind to think this is an Eze kind of game? And then sticking on Ivan Toney in the 94th minute. And we wouldn't have even seen anything from him if it didn't go to extra time. It just seems like he's getting away with it. And it won't carry on. So he's going to have to do something slightly differently. Or he's just waiting for, as you alluded to earlier, he's waiting for it all to click and us to thump someone and he can be like, there we go. But I think he's more likely to stay the same at the moment.
He's made comments to that effect, hasn't he, that you're 5% off at any time from like it clicking into gear or 5% from it going wrong. So he's completely in belief that he is really close to it working. But I don't think there's been a single period of play or moment where it's looked like that's working. And I think it's painstakingly obvious that that comes from the fact that one third of your pitch on the left-hand side is completely ineffective because you've got a left winger who is not interested in being out there and has maybe been told he doesn't have to be out there. And then you've got an exposed right back who's probably not in the best form in his career playing out of position. And the subs yesterday, Cole Palmer came on, that was the right decision. But that's because Trippier got injured, wasn't it? Because Saka went to left back then, who in the week said that's not the solution to it. And I think at the time, Declan Rice was speaking to Saka as if to say, mate, you're going to have to do a job because Saka wasn't happy about doing it. Which to me spells that that's at no point been a, right, this is a change we're going to make if it's not going right on a Sunday night chap. So that Saka was almost shocked to then be pushed to left back with Palmer coming on in his possession. So that looked like an injury-led one. Mainu comes off. I know he'd been booked, but looked like he was one of the brightest players for Eze, who Eze then ends up, when we're in front, playing that left wing-back role. And then, as you say, Ivan Toney. And Gareth Southgate said after the game, I've made up with Ivan Toney now, who didn't particularly want to speak to me coming on in the 94th minute with 2 minutes left because he thought he might not have a touch. But you know, he's gone on to have those 30 minutes, which have been great for him. And I think we're mates again now, which it was a bit tongue in cheek. But at the same time, I'm thinking, well, no, Ivan Toney's probably stood on the sideline going, what on earth are you expecting me to do with this game with 2 minutes to go? You're basically putting me on as a hit it up to the big man and let's try and win something in the final knock-ins. That's something, you know, we'd probably use Harry Maguire for in the past. So subs were crazy. The players who didn't come on, like Anthony Gordon, even crazier. And the timings of it just completely off. And he, you know, the script was written, 99 games, 99 and out, as you said. I think he's saved himself from a serious, serious barrage of abuse if we'd have just gone out with him letting the game meander like that. But you spoke in the week, didn't you? The Slovenia manager had some comments about our lack of substitutions.
Yeah. The last game we played, their left back was on a yellow card, and they said, "Are you surprised England didn't change it quicker?" And he's like, "Yeah, our left back was struggling." Do you know what I mean? And we did. I can't remember what time Cole Palmer came on, but it was far later than it should have been for a 0-0 game against Slovenia. And that's what I mean by it's not just one or two people that can't understand it; it's everyone. That team clearly needs a spark, and he's probably right. It might only be 5% away, but that 5%. Is balancing the team properly, and it will work so much better if you sort the left-hand side out. Like, that's, you don't have to be an expert to see that the pitch isn't stretched. Phil Foden can't play out there effectively. He can come in, and if he gets chances to come in, he can, you know, make things happen centrally, and he can fight for a position in that area of the pitch. But we've got a left wing on the bench in Anthony Gordon, who plays there every week. He's really, really good, and he's quick. And he will stretch the pitch. And even if he's not involved, he will give their right back something to think about. Whereas Phil Foden, you know, the right back at the moment is just thinking he's going to go inside. And every time Trippier got the ball, all of his runs were out to win rather than the other way around. And it becomes so predictable. And like you say, we end up playing on 75% of the pitch. And again, it goes stale. We don't get as many chances as we would if we had a proper left side. And it is annoying because, like you say, if Luke Shaw was fit, then that you probably could play Foden there because you'd get the width naturally from him. But he didn't bring another left back, and Luke Shaw was injured, as we all knew. So, again, something has to change on that side for me. And he's been given a couple of chances now. We sneaked through winning the group on 5 points. And now we've absolutely sneaked through the group stages at the last 16. We've got a chance now to go against Switzerland, whereby, listen, start with Anthony Gordon. If it's not working, then go back. But I guarantee he will give them something to think about. And that is a really interesting game now against Switzerland. But the other thing about changes, we went 1-0 up in extra time, and then he brings on Konsa and Gallagher, goes to a back five, and just tries to see it out for 15 minutes. And I know it worked, but we're better than Slovakia. Do you know what I mean? We're better than Slovakia. So if we just play, we are much more likely to get a better outcome than just saying, right, we're going to sit in and we are going to say, yes, you can have some chances now. Because that's what happens. When you try and see a game out, there's always a couple of balls flashed across the box. And they probably wouldn't happen if we played properly. And even then, he didn't bring Anthony Gordon on when there was a whole half to run into for most of it. And he's got the pace to do that and get him behind. So all the changes were bizarre in their timing. And then I thought really encapsulated what everyone thinks about Southgate's management style in the fact that we just sat on it for 15 minutes. And yes, we got through it, so it looks fine now. But again, against the better team, we wouldn't. So,
no, we invited pressure on in added time. When we scored the Kane goal to go 2-1 up, I thought, right, there's an opportunity here now because they're going to have to go for it for us to pick these off and get the third goal and put it to bed. It felt like we were just doing our normal thing that we got criticised against Serbia for, got criticised against Denmark for, where we just went further back and back and back. And I know it was kind of people out of position. I had Eze left wing back, had Konsa coming on. You had Saka stood at right wing back. I think he played three different positions for over 30 minutes yesterday. I think he was at left wing back for 30, right wing back for 30, and the other 60 at right wing. But it just seemed terrible, like those in-game tactics as well, to me. And as you say, a better team would have got that equaliser, and then you're down to the lottery of a penalty shootout. So, yeah, very strange, very strange. On the Anthony Gordon one, I got a bit of a thought on that, which is that, do you remember before the tournament when it was going to be squad announcement, the whole narrative from England fans? I think there is quite, you know, Gareth Southgate's always quite an easy person to knock, was like, Southgate has his favourites and he's going to pick his favourites. And it kind of felt like the pressure of that got to him, where he was like, well, I can't take Marcus Rashford and I can't take Jack Grealish to the tournament. I can't take Raheem Sterling. I'm going to have to include Anthony Gordon. And he's done that, but he clearly has no trust for Anthony Gordon. He's played him for 4 minutes against Slovenia. To not get on the pitch yesterday as our only real out and out pace outlet completely tells you that he's not having it. I don't see a world, and I might be wrong, maybe he's doing a bit of management, which Pep does sometimes, where he's got his arm around Anthony Gordon going, right, your game Saturday against Switzerland, I put my hands up if it is. But my view is that he's not having Gordon. And I think that pressure from the English media and English public of he picks his favourites has meant that he's thought, I can't take Sterling, Rashford, Grealish here. And therefore, he's got a winger who he's got zero trust for in the squad in Gordon.
Yeah, maybe. But it surprises me that he'd have trust in Eze to come on. Like, that was such a weird sub.
Yeah, true.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because Southgate, if you spoke to Southgate now, he could say, I'm justified. Like, loads of people yesterday, probably including me, would have taken Jude Bellingham off, and I'm justified. But we don't know what would have happened if he did make those changes. If at halftime yesterday, he took off three, just say, I don't know, Saka, Bellingham and Foden, and we brought on Palmer, Gordon and Trent or something like that, we might have won it 3-1 comfortably. And everyone's like, ah, now it's clicked. Right, so we do know that we need a proper winger on the left, but we'll never know. We will never, ever know. And I was thinking to myself just before half time yesterday when it was 1-0 Slovakia, I was thinking, I don't want us to score just before half time because then he won't change it. He'll think, right, we're back in it now and we can leave this team. And then before you know it, you're in the second half and you've got the same problems. We didn't score and he still didn't change it. And you sat there just watching the clock go down and you know that Slovakia are just going to go down and make 2-3 minutes out of every single injury that one of their players have. And you need to do something to change the momentum of the game. And it, like we keep saying, he's got away with one. And I will say, fair enough, maybe deserves it because he's got a lot of criticism for like bottling the Euros when we lost to Italy, but we lost that on penalties. That could have gone either way. Well, yesterday was a game where the luck's gone the other way and he's got it this time. And now he's got 3 games to win the tournament and he's got to do something to change the momentum of our team because at the moment it's so placid and Switzerland must be thinking this is the best time ever to play England because they don't know what they're doing and they look full of nerves, and all of these top players that they've got are playing at 50% of their capacity because of how they've been asked to play. And if he just makes a couple of tweaks from the start or earlier in the game and it's not working, we could see something completely different. And hopefully, moving on to Switzerland, I think they play a back five that we've already struggled to come up against this tournament. He'll see that and think, right, this is what I saw last time and this is how we're going to go about it this time. In knockout football, we have to get it right. And if not against Switzerland, we'll be punished worse than we were against Slovakia.
Well, it feels like Southgate probably was on the cusp of being sacked yesterday. However, he's won the game. He's now won 7 knockout games in his reign as England manager. Between 1966 and Southgate getting the job, England won 6 games. So he's done better than every other manager combined. But he was on the cusp there. And winning that yesterday from the jaws of defeat, it's a bit like being down to your last fiver at Cheltenham and you're going back a 66-1 winner and all of a sudden you've got £335 in your account for Gold Cup Day. He's now got a complete free hit, hasn't he? Quarterfinal against Switzerland. Probably momentum with England at the lowest it's been and sort of connection with the fans. You think back to previous tournaments of Atomic Kitten being sung for Southgate, You're the One, people wearing waistcoats. This tournament's been a bit different, like people chucking beer cups at them, questioning his every decision. He's got a complete and utter free hit now, so he can really, really use this opportunity to hopefully make some sort of change and give it a good go.
Yeah, and let's remember, in every tournament under Southgate so far, the World Cup in Russia, the Euros at home last time, and even in Qatar, there's always been moments where there has been discord with the fans. Like, I remember we scored a last-minute winner against Tunisia in the group game of Russia, and then we beat Colombia on penalties. Now, if we had gone out against Colombia then, he might have got sacked after that tournament. Oh, another penalty loss, another last 16 game, but we didn't. And it acted as a catalyst. And then we went on when we played Sweden and we got to the semi-final. The last 2 tournaments we've drawn against, I think, Scotland and USA, and everyone's like, oh. And there's always that kind of unrest, but then we managed to bring it back quicker. This is definitely the worst one, but a moment like Bellingham yesterday, and then obviously going on to win it via Kane, maybe that is the spark that we've all been waiting for. Maybe those players will think, cool, we're like a cat here with 9 lives. And this is our chance to go now and play fearlessly because we were out. Just think of it like we were out. And now you can just go all guns blazing and play properly. Don't worry about giving the ball away, because you know, in the spirit of actually trying to make something happen, play properly. Whether that will happen or not, because it seems like Southgate's actually quite happy with how things are happening at the moment. I don't know, but
Just touched on Southgate there and maybe the disconnect with the England fans, but it feels like there's been a bit of a weird kind of relationship between the England squad and maybe more so the media, and a little bit of the fans at this tournament. You've kind of had the comments from Bellingham, the gestures from Bellingham, the press conference with Harry Kane talking sort of directly towards Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer, Jordan Pickford, when we won the group, sort of like shouting at the fans, "We've won the group, man, come on." Declan Rice kind of interviews, things like that. It just kind of feels there's that disconnect. Do you think that's being kind of self-made by England camp, almost as like a siege mentality? It's us against them, like us against the world. What do you make of that?
Well, I think that's how they're spinning it. I just think that like the media is the big one, because they're the loudest voices that the England players are going to hit. They're not going to see what me and you are saying or anyone on Twitter, but they will see what Gary Neville says or Alan Shearer says or Gary Lineker. And I think it's stuff like this, like podcasts. Like they're not just saying constructive criticism in the studio now. Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer will then go onto a podcast, which everyone listens to, and call us shit and be a little bit stronger than you would on national TV. And that's what's making the headlines now. So that's why it's slightly harsher. And that's why this time it's harder for the England players to take, because it's not just the normal run-of-the-mill generic stuff you hear on telly. It's actually Gary Lineker saying we're shit and bits and pieces like that. And things are a little bit stronger. And the players are obviously not taking kindly to it and biting back. But I don't really mind that, to be honest with you. But like you say, Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer can say whatever they want to say. And if Bellingham wants to go back and say, "Yeah, that's for you, lads. You never won anything and we're still in this. Leave us to it. We're going to try and win the tournament." Fine. Absolutely fine. I don't mind that. But like you are right, it does feel like we're at the lowest kind of mood as a whole collective, team, fans, media, than any of the other tournaments. But that can change. Maybe we've started it yesterday with a spark, and maybe if we go and beat Switzerland, all of a sudden we're in a semi-final and things will look a little bit different. So, yeah, that siege mentality, they're so lucky they got that goal yesterday, or we're so lucky we got that goal in the last minute yesterday, because they would have been facing one of the biggest backlashes we've ever seen. It would have been worse than Iceland, but we didn't. So no one can really say too much more.
Look, we only saw 2 minutes of him as well in normal time, so might have had absolutely zero time of seeing him, but we got an extra 30 minutes as well. But I thought his hold-up play was brilliant, and his general play looked really good as well. He obviously got the assist for the Kane goal, but just a word on Big Ive. I know you've been impressed with him in behind the scenes as well with some of his Lions Den content with Declan Rice.
Yeah, well, Big Ive's a character, and we know about Big Ive. He's had a disruptive season this year, but look, it's not just about Big Ive, but what Big Ive showed yesterday was that he changed the dynamic of the game. It was obviously desperation. We had two up front, and for the 15 minutes that we had two up front, the end of normal time to the half time of extra time, we scored our two goals. We gave them something different to think about. And if we had done that earlier, it might not have been such a last gasp rabbit out of the hat moment. We might have done something. So it just goes to show, if you do something a little bit different, what you did at the start hasn't worked. We're 1-0 down against Slovakia after 93 minutes. That is the definition of not working. If you do something different, it can change things and give them something to think about. And if you're out on your feet as a Slovakia defender, do you want to see Anthony Gordon come on in the 60th minute to run at you? Do you want to see Big Ive coming and backing into you and drawing fouls and getting on the end of crosses and throw-ins? No, you don't. And like you say, he was fantastic. He came on. I'm sure he would have been, although he didn't touch the ball, he'd have been a presence in the first goal. The second goal, he won the free kick and he provided the assist for Kane. And he's someone that I think will probably be on the radar for maybe an earlier introduction if Southgate listens to anyone and what anyone says. But he certainly did himself no harm and he almost scored at the end, didn't he?
Yeah, it would have been an absolute goal as well.
The one time we did get through, obviously Palmer, I think he played it across to whoever, maybe Eze or whoever's on the left, back to Tony. And I think Dixon said it in the commentary, should have gone to the corner flag, and maybe he shouldn't. But I'm a football purist. I'm so happy he just absolutely smashed that. And on another day, it might have gone in. I wouldn't be saying that if they went down the other end and scored and we'd lost on penalties. But Yeah, I was happy with Big Ives' contribution yesterday. It had done his confidence the world as good as well, and that's an option now. And I know in your mind, you'd start him, wouldn't you, up front with Kane?
I would. I'd have him up there with Kane. I don't know how you fit that in. Obviously, 4-4 fucking 2's gone out the window now out of football. But for a period, we had it and it looked like it was chaos. I don't know. I've not really put too much thought into how you could get both them into the team. Maybe with your back three, rather than you having kind of the Foden next to Bellingham behind Kane. Maybe you could have the Bellingham or Foden behind Big Ive and Kane. But Harry Kane, I think, has got really good hold-up play, right? I actually do think that he's strong hold-up play, distributes the ball, unbelievable goal scorer. But I don't think he's the physical presence that Ivan Toney is. We're about to we're going to preview the Switzerland in more detail later in the week, the game. But we're going to come up against a back three of Charles Rodriguez and Manuel Akanji. We've struggled against back threes in this tournament. Harry Kane's not been able to look after the ball and then bring players into play. I just think, rather than having someone play off Harry Kane, why can't Harry Kane play off Big Ive? Why can't we have the most deadly goal scorer in the world, the player who's trying to pick up the pieces from Big Ive holding the ball? If Big Ive picks the ball up, drops it to Harry Kane, I know you might want tens in behind your striker, but Harry Kane's as good as anyone as then knocking the ball out. If you've got wing-backs high up the pitch or you've got Bellingham then as well. It's not going to happen. It's complete fantasy. But I would love a situation where Switzerland just suddenly scanning down the team sheet. Yeah. Fucking hell. Big Ives starting with Harry Kane up front. It'd just be... It's so un-Southgate, but I'd absolutely love to see it.
We have played a form of like 5-3-2 in the past. Under Southgate in World Cup 18, I think Dele Alli and Lingard sat in midfield with maybe Dyer, and then it was like Sterling off Kane. There's a two. Yeah. I know it's a different dynamic, but you can have that shape with Toney and Kane. I think, I'm not sure I would start with that, but I think it's a really good option to change it to mix it up if it's not working. Because I think, for me, A1 Harry Kane is having two quick wingers either side of him and being able to either get on the end of what they're doing or dropping in and, you know, creating space for them to run into and finding them with balls, which we haven't seen this tournament at all so far, mainly because we haven't had a left winger on, I think. But what you've just said is definitely an option. I think maybe after yesterday, we said this before the tournament when we were talking about whether we take Ivan Toney. He's just got that something a little bit different that you can't explain, that X factor that you want on your team rather than against you. And you definitely want it on the pitch before the 94th minute if you're 1-0 down. And hopefully, again, if we need it against Switzerland, we will do.
I think both strikers have made impact. So I thought Ollie Watkins was bright against Denmark. Kasper Schmeichel blocking with his leg, costing us a win there. But he was more that sort of running behind. But something about Ivan Toney yesterday. And I would love to think that he's going to have another say in this tournament before it's done for England. But we'll have to wait and see what Southgate's doing from a substitute point of view in the next game, because you're probably right. We're not going to see him from the start. Look, let's talk about some of the other teams we've seen so far. We've had four of the eight last 16 games, started with Switzerland, who, as I say, we'll preview the game in a bit more detail later in the week. But Italy were pretty poor, but Switzerland, well-drilled, back three, Xhaka running things in midfield and looked quite lively up front as well.
Yeah, they did. They were really good. And they seem to have like good players in every area of the pitch, and they've got pace that they attack with. They've got players that can handle the ball like Akanji, and they've got dogs like Xhaka that always seem to come alive for Switzerland. So they're obviously a good outfit, and they'll be hard for anyone to get past. But I thought Italy were as bad as Switzerland were good, and I thought they made them look a lot better. Let's not forget, Switzerland couldn't beat Scotland. I think that was 1-1, wasn't it? Do you know what I mean? No one's talking about that now. It's like, oh, the Swiss are going to be terrifying because they beat Italy. Now, Italy were poor. And if we're just as poor as we were yesterday, or as Italy were, they'll beat us as well. But I still think they're one of those teams that we're a lot better than. And if we do the things that we can do right and control that, then we'll get past it. Switzerland, very, very impressive so far. Italy, unbelievably bad, I thought. Really, really poor. But when you're starting Scamacca up front, who scored like two goals in 50 appearances or something, I'm not quite sure what they were expecting. I feel a little bit for the manager because a lot of their, even some of the bright players, from the, like Chiesa doesn't look the same player that he was 3 years ago. And I don't think anyone really, it was weird. No one really expected Italy to beat Switzerland, did they? So, yeah, there'll be probably the toughest test so far for us, but you'd have taken Switzerland in the quarters for sure. But they'll be probably licking their lips watching England, thinking we can win that.
Yeah, Jacob's done an interview today saying that he feels like Switzerland are going further in the tournament. He doesn't feel like this is going to be the end of their journey. So they will be confident in it. But I think we had a quick look at the bookies' odds yesterday, and England slight favourites, but still above odds on. And you've got Switzerland at about 5-2. So I'd imagine there'll be a fair few non-English supporters who will be having a very firm look at those odds. Friday, 5 o'clock, got an absolutely mouth-watering quarterfinal coming up. Germany against Spain. We've seen obviously both of them in their last 16 games. Start with Spain last night. Survived an early scare against probably everyone's favourite second team in the tournament, Georgia. But I think they're showing real signs of quality, Spain. Some of their players look absolutely electric. Rodri, Nico Williams, Fabian Ruiz.
Yeah, I'm real. And they've got round pegs in round holes, haven't they? Those two wingers they've got. And I know Tegel, who's missing in action at the moment, highlighted the young lad they've got on one side. What's his name?
Yamal.
He looks good, although a little bit erratic in front of goal. And Williams, on the left-hand side, I thought he looked unbelievable last night. Like, he's looked good in all the games, but they've got proper outlets, and then they've got an absolute midfield, haven't they? Rodri could play in there with a couple of planks of wood and control the game. He did yesterday. And what I found annoying yesterday is Spain get the City Rodri. Why do we get the England Foden and Walker? Do you know what I mean? Why don't we get the City Foden and City Walker and Stones, although Stones have been quite good so far. But particularly Foden, they have got the City Rodri. That goal that Rodri scored was such a City kind of like 1-0 down, but you know they're going to score. Just perfectly placed into the bottom corner, and then they came alive. And I mean, they never should have been 1-0 down. To be fair, it was the only attack of the half, I think, for Georgia, and they deserve their goal because they've done well this tournament. But Spain looked brilliant, and that's going to be, I think, a lot of people's favourites to win the tournament. And if you're Germany, you're thinking, "Cool, how's your luck getting them in the quarterfinals?" But mouth-watering game, because obviously they've got home advantage, the Germans, and they've looked pretty good in most of their games, albeit probably slightly lucky to get past Denmark the other night due to some VAR favourable shouts, shall we say.
Yeah, I've still not seen, we've seen all the semi-automated kind of still pictures where it changed to the kind of cartoon graphic and shows the offside. I've not seen the one for Germany-Denmark. It looked a really weird one for Christiansen. And then poor bloke thinks he scored. And Anderson. Joachim Anderson thinks that he's put his country 1-0 up against Germany, scores his first ever international goal, and then cuts to a minute later and he's looking at a cricket third umpire playing snicko back to see if it's hit his outstretched hand from 3 yards.
That's what I was just going to say. That was the worst decision of the tour. Actually, there's been two. One didn't really matter because it was really early on in the groups and Rodri should have been sent off for a penalty against Croatia. But that Anderson, why is Snicko now being involved for handballs? That I don't remember ever in the history of football, certainly since VAR's come in, whether there's a question whether it's hit part of his, whether there's contact with the hand or the arm. That's not the deciding factor. Like, it's not whether it's hit his hand or not. It's whether it's in an unnatural position. Was it pulled to hand? Was it too close? And all those sorts of things. And Anderson's hand was in exactly the natural position. And he said, I was like a yard away from him and he's kicked it and it's hit my hand. But it's like they're looking at Snicko as if to say, yeah, there's the spike, so it's handball. Right, so anything that makes contact now is handball. That's not the rules. And these international tournaments always seem to rip up the rule book and they like start new precedents.
Something on the biggest stage.
Yeah, like in the World Cup last time, there was like 10 minutes of added time of every half. and then like all of a sudden in the Premier League, and then it fizzled out. And then this tournament has gone the other way. It's like, no, we're only adding on stuff that's actually happened. And it's like 2 minutes of every half. And it's like this Snicko thing. Are we going to start seeing Snicko? Like, is that just a private company that's in like got a football Snicko and they're making millions out of it? We don't need that in football. There's no need for Snicko. No one's ever... Anderson wasn't claiming that it didn't hit his hand. Everyone knows it hit his hand. You can see it on the slow motion replay. That isn't the deciding factor. It's whether it's in an unnatural position and is that ball to hand, etc.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, because because nobody's questioning whether it hits the hand, it takes all judgment away from actually, is it handball in regards to his arms not in a too much of an unnatural position? It's hitting from 4 yards. It's then like Michael Oliver, who, you know, it just has to be English refs on this occasion. He's checking the snicko and it's like, oh yeah, it's hit his hands. That's a penalty. It's like, no, nobody's questioned that. Everyone can see that it's hit Joachim Andersen's hand and flown up into the air. It's, is it handball in the context of the situation? We don't need to be told that it's hit his hand.
It's like in the Premier League when they freeze frame like challenges and it will be like someone studs up on someone's knee and like, you're like, yes, that freeze frame in the context of coming in at 100 miles an hour in 2 footers would be a red card. But all these, that foot's actually brushing down and it's actually the legs. It's the context of the situation that is being taken out by these methods of making the decision. And in Premier League, I've noticed they're freezing stuff at angles to make it look like a red card when it's not, or a penalty. And snicko, like I said, I've never ever seen a penalty incident or handball incident where the defender's gone, that hasn't hit my hand. That's not the argument. The argument is there's nothing I could do about it. It's not, I haven't put my hand up to stop it. He's just punted the ball into the box and he's a yard away from me and it's hit my hand as I've turned. And if his hand's not there, no one turns like that. It's just not natural. And that's supposed to be the deciding factor. Is it in a natural position? The answer for me was yes. And Joachim Andersen could consider himself very unlucky, I thought.
Yeah, Musiala scored, put the game beyond doubt, running through against tired defence. I think Joachim Andersen again, poor bloke, actually. Wet pitch after the storm and slots home. So, as you say, sets up a mouthwatering tie in the quarterfinals on Friday. We obviously know England, Switzerland on the Saturday, but still a few more games to sort out. We got France, Belgium and Portugal, Slovenia tonight. Expecting any upsets there, or are you fully expecting a France versus Portugal quarterfinal?
No, Portugal will win. The only thing I'll say is there hasn't been a penalties yet. And you'd normally expect at least one, wouldn't you? And France have flattered to deceive, haven't they? But I think they came second in their group in the end, didn't they?
They didn't win their group, so they've left our side of the draw, haven't they?
And when you're playing a team like Belgium, I mean, we played Slovakia yesterday and had trouble. So even if you're not, Belgium might not be, they might not have the best momentum either at the moment. They've still got some big match-winning players in Kevin De Bruyne and Lukaku and, you know, Tielemans and big players that we know can play. So if they're not at it, I think France will win that game, but I don't think they're massive favourites because I don't think they've played particularly well this tournament either. And that's probably the saving grace for England at the moment, that context. I don't think, other than Spain, no one's really looked amazing. I think Germany have had a fairly decent route, but Spain are the only team that have looked scintillating to me. I suppose we're all kind of Belgium fans. It'd be nice to get as many big tournament, as many of the big boys out as possible before the final. But yes, probably France and Portugal, but maybe one to go to penalties. But just on Germany there, this is a really good point that's been made a few times. They dropped, what's his name, Wirtz?
The guy, Florian Wirtz, Leroy Sané.
Yeah, it's the exact comparable to Foden, isn't it? He got Premier League Player of the Year. No one is saying that Phil Foden isn't good enough to play for England, but he ain't the left winger. So if you don't think he's good enough to play 10, which would be his preferred position, take him out. Do you know what I mean? That's an exact comparable. And Sané had a lot of joy in that game because he's a proper winger in his place.
That's the other point, is it's not even, you know, Gareth Southgate can still think that Phil Foden can work there, but sometimes games are set up for certain players. I think yesterday, a 37-year-old fullback was perfect for Anthony Gordon to get at him. There was a game a couple of years ago, I can't remember what tournament it was in. It might have been like a qualifier, but Jadon Sancho played, I think, against like North Macedonia or something like that. And they had like a 38, 39-year-old fullback in, and Jadon Sancho came into the team and gave the guy absolute kittens with his footwork. And it's like, well, sometimes there can just be games and opposition that is set up. Nagelsmann has seen for Germany, Florian Wirtz, best player in the Bundesliga last year, but actually I'm going to go for the pace of Leroy Sané against Denmark, because we've shown against England have shown against Denmark that actually if you play in front of them, they've got a very good back three. If you try and get in behind them, like Ollie Watkins did once, they're very vulnerable. And that was summed up by Musiala's goal and Sane's performance. So Yeah, you're spot on. Potentially a France versus Portugal and Germany versus Spain on that side of the draw, which would set up two massive quarterfinals and then a huge semi-final as well with the four of the biggest teams in there. On our side of the draw, obviously us versus Switzerland, but you got Romania, Netherlands. Romania obviously showed glimpses in this tournament, and Holland have also shown glimpses, but not looked brilliant. And then probably more interestingly, Austria, who did win France's group, who've looked good, and Turkey, who've also looked really good and scored some great goals.
Yeah, I think Austria, similarly, probably a bit more so than Switzerland. They just look a really good team, like the opposite to us, like not as many household names, but really working well together. And they're like a well-oiled machine. But Turkey, they're really, really well backed. Every time they've played, they've had like millions of fans, and they just seem to have a bit of an 11th man. So I think that's a really, really good game there. It is Austria-Turkey, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, Romania-Netherlands.
Really, really good game. And then Holland, you know, Holland-Romania. I mean, you'd expect Holland to win it, but Romania have looked a little bit lively, and you never know, they might be able to cause something silly. But quite kind of hoping that Netherlands do get knocked out at some point. I know Austria have been good, but I think Holland could be all wrong for England. They've got like their strength is in defence, and we've struggled.
Yeah, Van Dijk just more Harry Kane.
And then they've got a little bit more quality up front in the likes of Gakpo and Memphis than what we've seen already that we've had to deal with, like the Slovakians and the Slovenians. So I wouldn't mind seeing Holland get knocked out in terms of our route if we're going to proceed in the tournament. But we've already had a massive stroke of luck, so at some point we need to start doing things to take matters into our own hands, which hopefully starts against the Swiss on Saturday. But yeah, some interesting games. I'm looking forward to the football tonight because obviously there's some big teams, and then tomorrow just to sort of see how our side of the draw is shaping up should we beat Switzerland.
Yeah.
And then we've got a couple of days and we go again on the weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I think that side of the, you know, we say some of those teams are dangerous and England haven't showed any sort of form. But if someone had said to you pre-tournament, would you like Harry Kane and Jude Bellingham to be one goal off top goal scorer after the round of 16 with Switzerland in the quarterfinals and one of Romania, Holland, Austria or Turkey in the semi-final? You'd snap that up every day of the week and twice on Sunday, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. That's positive perspective. So let's stick with that.
And let's end on that note. We'll be back before the weekend. We will preview the quarterfinals in a bit more detail. Hopefully have some more news on fitness of some of the England players, including Luke Shaw, and look ahead to the Switzerland game. We'll know what the other ties look like. We'll preview them as well. But Lauro, been a pleasure. Cheers, mate.
Pleasure. Bye-bye. 1, 2